Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Let's go around the NFL. Mike Mayock got fired yesterday by the Las Vegas Raiders.
Shocked? Surprised?
No. I think as soon as John Gruden was out of there, I felt like Mike Mayock was out of there. Mike Mayock was already being rumored to be out of there, even if John Gruden was still around early in the year.
But can I ask you, again, we're talking about communication. I think that there was definitely a personality conflict, and you could see that with Gruden and Mayock and where they came from and how they were previously in their previous lives and jobs. But I think that when you look at it and say, where did Mike Mayock slip up? Like, he got the picks right? But if you want to talk about character, you can say that about Ruggs, but you can also look at Ruggs and say from the minute that his best friend was killed by a drunk driver in that accident scenario, he went and endeared himself even more to his best friend's family. He honored his best friend with every touchdown he scored. So I don't know that anybody could have seen it to that level or be blamed for that, or a first-round pick that suddenly starts brandishing a gun and doing those kind of things. But again, and I understand that in these interviews, you try and really delve deep and do your research. But the fact that with all the things that he did, look, we everybody was looking at them from the minute that they got on the job going, you traded Khalil Mack for what and for who and how bad was that? But after a monster start for the Bears, he kind of leveled off to the point where you're like, okay, I don't think that was absolutely horrible. I think they did a lot of good things while he was there. And then to endure the slip up after slip up from a franchise's perspective, whether it was self-inflicted or not, doesn't matter. They still made the playoffs. I don't know that he deserved to be fired.
I'm on the side where I wouldn't bring back Rich Bisaccia. So
I
definitely wouldn't bring back Mike Mayock. I think that he and Gruden were kind of that partnership. And I mean, Mayock's career as the general manager hasn't been great. I think he's sub 500 in his years as the GM. The one that I look at more is not the Ruggs situation, because that was a terrible mistake, an accident that just, I mean, it's awful in a variety of different ways. I look at the Damon Arnette one, the guy that's brandishing the gun, was a character concern coming into the league, somebody you took a chance on and just like multiple times showed you that he wasn't the dude that you should have been picking in that spot. I look at that a little bit more. And the roster that he constructed, like, yeah, they had this great run towards the end of the season, got back to the playoffs, but can you do better than Mike Mayock? The answer to that is yes. And I look at the GM job, the head coaching job, the right guard spot, all the same. And if I can improve at that position, I improve at that position.
I will say that they missed on their offensive lineman from Alabama. Yeah, he has been a penalty waiting to happen on every single play this year for where they drafted him, for the other guys they could have had. But I look at on the flip side of that and say, when they got Josh Jacobs where they got to have him play the way he played, you know, to say Waller was a guy that turned into one of the best tight ends in football, you know, that he did some good things too. And then based on the fact that they endured a move, and we keep talking about Caserio having to have that relationship with whatever coach he hires and how important that is.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that he was up against the wall on, this was his first time ever doing this gig, and everybody was like, can a TV guy make the transition? And then he didn't have a pre-existing relationship with a Gruden like that, and they have both have dominant personalities. Just to make it work to the level that they did, and with Gruden having all the job security and all the money, I think that I think there's a lot of reasons why I don't think he deserved to be fired. Now, I will say, but for this franchise to push forward, you're going to need a GM to have a relationship with the head coach. So either you trusted him to find a guy that he knew, or if you didn't, then you had to do what you had to do.
And that might have been part of it, too, where they didn't want Mayock to be the one hiring the new head coach. And I'm with you. I don't think Mayock was like this terrible failure. He did a pretty decent job, especially the criticism that the Raiders took whenever they hired him. I just feel like they can upgrade in that spot. Question now becomes, what do they do with Rich Bisaccia? Deserves to be back, but does he come back? Bisaccia, talking to the media, says that he has talked with Raiders owner Mark Davis.
Mark and I have had some conversations. There's due process. He has to interview some other candidates, as I well know. I'm very respectful of the process, what it's supposed to look like and how it's supposed to work. And I think we'll be in constant conversation, and we'll certainly talk again before the week is over.
class act at Bisaccia. Derek Carr vouching for Bisaccia to be the head coach. In my opinion, you don't make important decisions based on what a mediocre quarterback wants. Like Derek Carr should not be driving the Raiders franchise, making these critical decisions. I'm looking at that as they're going to be looking for a new GM, a new head coach. I feel like they can upgrade in both of those spots. If I'm Mark Davis, very much appreciative of what Rich Bisaccia did. I make him the highest paid special teams coordinator in the NFL, but I don't want him back as my head coach.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that this is a high profile city. This is a high profile job. This is a roster that was a playoff team, so they're looking to win now and take the next step forward, not any steps backwards. And I think that when we saw what happened with the first-time head coach over the full 17-game schedule right here in Houston, look, short-term, Bisaccia was the perfect guy to be able to keep the ship afloat. But when you start thinking about a full season under him now and the long-term, he's going to have to learn a lot with on-the-job training. And I don't think you have time to train when you're trying to, you know, gain spots in the standings and try and chase the championship.
He did a great job. I'm not denying him that. Does he deserve to be back? Yeah, maybe. But I feel like you can get a better head coach on this market, and I believe Mark Davis is on the verge of doing just that. Meanwhile, in Dallas, Stephen Jones saying Mike McCarthy will be back.
Are you of the belief, or are you confident that Mike McCarthy will continue to lead this team next to lead this season?
Absolutely. Very confident.
There you go. Short and sweet. Stephen Jones saying.
Shorter than that, Jeremy?
What's that?
For only the second time in multiple years, the owner and general manager blew off an opportunity to be on his own radio show.
Jerry
today.
Jones.
And so when Jerry does that, you know, the last time he did that?
Yep.
Right before he fired Jason Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to keep an eye on because of the fact that Jerry has never seen a microphone that he does not like. And the fact that it's his show with his name on it, which he likes even more. The fact that he didn't do it, and a lot of times when he's angry or he knows he's going to get questioned and he doesn't like it, he comes out guns blazing and cussing and goes right at the announcers and loves doing what he does. The fact that he completely took a hard pass today means there's a whole lot of hard thinking going on in Jerry.
The entertainment side of me wants the Cowboys to move on for Mike McCarthy. Like, you have the Dallas Cowboys job opened up. That's exciting. That's something that has storylines. That's something we will talk about, obviously. If I'm Jerry Jones and you're asking me what I need to do, like, I fire Mike McCarthy. And it's not all from Sunday's game. It's a cumulative thing.
And it's the thing that you knew you were hoping, if you're a Cowboys fan, it didn't bite you in the butt at the wrong time. But there was already too many chunks taken out of your fanny during the course of the season with all the missteps that he did with game management, clock management, decision-making on the sidelines. All the things that you're like, you know what, if he's doing it then, God forbid he does it when you need it most. And he did. And the other thing that you have to worry about on top of all of that is it's not even your offensive coordinator. It's your defensive coordinator that's got four interviews set up already for this week alone that used to be a head coach that took a team to a Super Bowl. So it's not like he couldn't do what he's going to be asked to do again. He's going to be highly sought after. You thought Kellen Moore was your handpicked guy to eventually succeed your head coach. If you don't do something to hang on to Dan Quinn, he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Quinn could be the best head coach of the three guys that you mentioned between McCarthy, Quinn, and Kellen Moore. Also, I mean, Doug Peterson would be a pretty good fit in Dallas. He's an offensive guy. He's a quarterback guy. I think the Cowboys would be, like, silly not to be interested in a Doug Peterson who took the Eagles to win a Super Bowl against the Tom Brady Patriots. Super Wild Card Weekend is over in the NFL. Second season of seven teams making the playoffs from each conference. The 7 seed is now 0-4 against the 2 seed. Not really a ton of great games. Just a lack of quality games in Super Wild Card Weekend with the new 7th team in the playoffs in each conference for the second year in a row. Does it make you miss the 12-team playoff a little bit?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think. Here's the thing. I do feel it's a little. I was disappointed in the level of the games this weekend. I was looking for last night's game to be more competitive. I was looking for the Patriots-Bills game to be more competitive, especially because you talk about two specific games with division rivals that know each other very well, that normally lends itself to a game that doesn't get out of hand. And both games were not only out of hand, they were very unentertaining. And then you take the Chiefs-Steelers game as well that started out close for a little over a quarter and then just got completely off the rails as quick as you can imagine. That's not what the NFL wanted. That's not why they did adding the extra team. So I think when you look at it, that if you're going to tweak it for next season, that's some of the negatives. And the other thing is, it's really unfair that I've said all along, It's great they can say the first ever Monday Night Football playoff game, but it's really awful if you now have given the team that you're going to play an extra day and you have to go from on the road in a hostile environment in Los Angeles, and then you have to go home and you have to reset, and then you've got to go yet again on the road, only this time you've got to go all the way down to Florida on the other end of the country and travel to play them again. I don't think that's fair at all for the Rams.
It's not fair for the Rams, but here's my pushback on that. They're going to play a higher seed. So, like,
I get it.
If you have a problem with it, be a higher seed. You know, it's not a situation where it's like you're looking at the top two teams in college football and, like, the number three teams undefeated. Like, they have a say in where they ended up. And if you care that much about it, or if you really wanted it badly, maybe try for the top spot in the NFC.
Nah, see, but I think that, again, it's an unfair thing to bring days of the week into it. It's how you handle the schedule is one thing. That's right. But the rest of the teams in the league didn't have to deal with a 24-hour period of time that sets you back in terms of how much.
Well, that's always been the case. It just hasn't been on Monday. It's been Saturday, Sunday.
Plus, it's the Rams going all the way across the country. That's the worst-case scenario for a team that won the game, that won their division, and that the credit that you get for winning the division and doing all those things is you get one less day to prepare, and you've got to fly all the way across the country. I get if it was just they just had to fly across the country, because then your argument holds water. But to me, the fact that because of a league decision, because of the money and the exposure with the broadcast contract, you made them have one less day than the team you're playing, that's an unfair advantage.
But it's the same thing for the Sunday teams that have to play on Saturday. It's always been the case. It's just been different days that we're talking about.
Normally,
it's been Sunday to Saturday as opposed to Monday to Sunday.
Normally, they do it conference-wise so that both teams the following week that played on Saturday have to play on Sunday. So then it's not an unfair advantage. The fact that one team gets a full extra day, I think it's just that's too much of an advantage.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an advantage. I'm not arguing that. I for one, do not miss the 12-team playoff. I like the extra team. I'm all for it. I'm for more football. I don't care if it's three games Saturday, three games Sunday. I don't care if it's two games Saturday, three games Sunday, one Monday. I like more football. Just how I roll. 713-780-ESPN. There are a couple of fraud teams, though, in the NFL in this postseason, even now with the seven teams. Is it worth being a playoff fraud? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All right, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, you know, we're struggling with the cold weather. You're starting a new year. You made resolutions. Don't know if you're keeping them or not, but you may need someone to help you, to guide you through so that you can get where you want to get to. Those are the people at Apollo Men's Health. Two locations near downtown Houston to better serve you. But get in contact with them because they're experts. I did years ago, and I'm so glad that I did because I realized a lot of things that I wasn't aware of that was actually holding me back. And the fact that they found a program for me in which I was able to decrease my body fat and increase my muscle and do the things in terms of my cholesterol and some of the family issues that I've had to address it and attack it so that I don't have the same issues my parents had as they got older and they continued to mature. Those are the kind of things that they can help you with at Apollo Men's Health. It starts with hormone therapy for men and women. If you're just lacking energy in your life, they're going to get you on a program that works. Women are in the lobby all the time. They're making their appointments. They're reaping the benefits. You can too. There's all the different ways you can do it, from administering it yourself at home to visiting weekly to even, for guys, cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy. You only have to go once every 6 months, but yet you reap all the benefits on a daily basis. They also have a full-body composition analysis that only takes 60 seconds but allows you to chart your results on a workout program, recover quicker with HGH peptide therapy. The best thing you can do is set up an appointment and be honest and go with an open mind. Give them honest answers. They're going to find you results. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. You're going to find out most major insurances accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Get a free B12 shot, which I get every Friday. You can too, and you can find out if it gives you the energy that it gives me and works for you. They're fantastic people because they care. They're not going to try and sell you on something that doesn't work. They're always going to sell you on things that do. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You think there's some fraud playoff teams that were in the playoffs this season?
Well, one
Steelers?
Particular. Yeah, the Steelers, Steelers are the one I look to immediately.
How about the Eagles? The Eagles are kind of fraudy, I think. They beat up on the Washington football team and the Giants in a weak division.
I think more than fraudy, I think that they made really bad in-game decisions and game planning before the game for the way they took on that matchup. I think that everybody knew they were going to run the ball, but then they had alienated the run. And then much like we were talking about when we were talking about the Cowboys with CeeDee Lamb and who they went away from, the fact that your bread and butter is your best wide receiver in Smith and you basically didn't let him sniff the football until it was too late, that was a bigger issue to me than the fact that I give them credit as huge overachievers, but you know my feelings on Jalen Hurts. I think he's a hell of an athlete and hell of a football player. I don't think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. The fact that they came from where they came from to get there, and then they got help. And you know what? They can't help it if other teams don't step up either. You can say they backed into the playoffs, but I don't think that they were a bad football team.
To me, it's like, you can finish in the top seven of the conference and still not be a playoff caliber team. And I think that's where you're like kind of defining, where we're trying to define like what is a fraud. Like the Eagles were 9-8. They took advantage of a bad division. I don't look at that team as like a playoff team. None of us look at the Steelers as like a playoff team. Some people, Nick Wright was calling the Chiefs against the Steelers better than a bye week because it was a cupcake.
Such a big honk for the Chiefs.
He is, but I mean, you can see the point. I mean, they were never in serious threat, even when they were trailing 7-0 in the second quarter.
I think that there was some concern, and I think that I was shocked when I saw that more than a quarter into that game, the Steelers were up 7-0, albeit on a defensive touchdown, and it was essentially one guy that was trying to win the game by himself in Watt. But when you look at it, I think that was surprising and shocking, but I don't know that it was a bye. Although you can say that, you know what, to defend Nick's point, when you only played them less than a month ago and you blew their doors off then, and then you blow their doors off again now. Again, though, if other teams had done their job and won their games on that final Sunday of the regular season, then the Steelers, they don't have anything to apologize for because they just played their schedule and it worked out that they were a playoff team.
No. The Steelers and the Eagles don't have anything to apologize for. But I look at those teams as, like, no one gave them a chance to win that game, and rightfully so, and they didn't win their games. Eagles losing convincingly to the Bucs, Steelers losing convincingly to the Chiefs. The question, though, is it worth being one of those teams? Is it worth being a fraud? Like, choose your favorite team. If it's the Texans, if it's the Packers, like, do you even want to be in the playoffs at that spot where, like, you sneak in, like, crazy things have to happen, extenuating circumstances have to happen for you to be the seventh seed in the conference? Do you want that? Is that something that you would like, or is it better just missing?
Absolutely. Okay. And you know why?
Why?
It goes further than just football.
Huh.
It goes to the marketing side of things. It goes to the motivational side of things on both the business and the football operations staff. It goes to a morale building when you can come in and say, you know what? We've come a long way. We were a playoff team last year. And so with that in mind, we're building on this and we're building on that. We're building on TJ Watt. We're building on the fact that we've got a running back that led the league as a rookie in rookies rushing. We've got receivers that you can rely on. We've got defensive players that still are at the top of their game. Yes, we need to bolster our offensive line, but who cares? Because you know what? We have less to fix than most because we're a playoff team and we had success. And obviously Ben is not going to be with us anymore. But if we can find that guy, and believe you me, we're going to be out there trying our hardest. It's a lot easier to convince people on hope and sell season tickets and have people that want to still buy the black and gold merchandise than if they weren't and they missed and they were bad. And then on top of that, their you know, iconic quarterback leaves and people goes, well, good Lord, what do I got to hold out hope for?
I would say this, though. Like, the Texans, they've had a couple of years where they were a fraud playoff team. They had a couple of years where they were a fraud division champion. Like, yeah, they won it because they were better than the other three teams, but they were never taken seriously as a team that could go deep. 9-7, AFC South champions, Brian. We all remember that. We all know that. But I still think it's better to have that playoff football. And one of the other areas that I look at it is from, like, a young player perspective. Like, usually young players that are champions in the future of their career, usually they have early moments in their career where they had playoff failures. Like, I don't think the Cardinals are a fraud to be in the postseason. They had a very good first half of the season and then fell apart, losing four of their last five regular season games and then losing in the playoffs. And Kyler Murray was abysmal yesterday. A lot of players, though, will learn from the game that they had yesterday, the playoff failure that Kyler Murray had yesterday, and it will elevate them going forward. Like, we're going to find out a lot about Kyler Murray next season. We're going to find out a lot about Jalen Hurts next season. A lot of times those playoff failures can elevate that player for the course of their career. Like, even Michael Jordan. You go back to the Jordan days, he had playoff failures in the first few years of making the playoffs, and it took him a while to even get to those
63
playoffs.
Against the Celtics and lost.
They're lessons learned. They're lessons learned, and until you're in the postseason, you don't really quite understand, I think, what playoff football is. Like, Kyler Murray yesterday had an abysmal effort. I'm not so sure that that abysmal effort isn't going to be good for the longevity of his career. A lot of times that stuff can help.
I don't disagree with you guys. To an extent, there's value in the fraudulent playoffs. And I'll even say this as a fan. Sometimes you just need that every once in a while to be a refresher. But the concern about a fraudulent playoff run is you can start to extend the length of guys who shouldn't be there, like their time with you, whether it's a quarterback. You know, does Philly, thankfully, because it's Philly, I think they're probably more likely to move on from Jalen Hurts. But there's a lot of teams who, if they watch Jalen Hurts get to the playoffs, they'd say, this is our guy. Same thing with GM, same thing with coaches. So I kind of think it depends where you are in the process, you know, with your organization.
Well, and at a certain point, guys, you also get to that James Harden theory, right? Of it, you're known as a great regular season player, that when the lights are the brightest and the stage is the biggest, that you don't show. And that's what you're looking at with Kyler Murray right now. I think that, yeah, I think because of the game plan, because of the way that things went for Philly, there's still a majority of the fan base with the Eagles that are like, I'm okay giving Hurts another year and then figuring it out. But I'd also be okay if they went and started to figure out if they could get a better quarterback. Not that we get rid of Hurts and we keep him on the roster and we use him into certain packages and do different things, but they're more open-minded, but they're not as critical. If you're a Cardinals fan, especially the way you started the season undefeated for so many weeks, and Kyler Murray is starting to look like more Russell Wilson than ever before, where he's notoriously going to turn out to be a guy that in the first 10 weeks of the season is going to be an MVP candidate, and then not only is he going to fade, he's going to fall off the planet. What I saw from Kyler Murray last night should be so alarming for Cardinals fans because of the fact that I was already critical of his body language when things happen that don't go positively. When I saw the way that he essentially looked like a deer in the headlights and the panic in that underhand throw, which is the shortest pick six in the history of the NFL playoffs, and the way he suddenly, anytime there was a pass rush, just hit the deck. He didn't head for dodge and utilize his legs. He just basically bailed. That has a ton of concern for me.
He played awful yesterday. He was abysmal. But a lot of times those failures early in your career in the postseason can be paramount for the future of being in the postseason. And look, we're going to learn a lot about Kyler Murray going forward. Like, what did he learn from that game yesterday? Because there's two things that lead to change more than anything else. It's embarrassment and it's desperation. He was embarrassed after that game yesterday. So is he going to be somebody that takes things a little bit more seriously? Is he going to take that next step in his NFL career? We're going to find out a lot about Kyler Murray going forward because he was both embarrassed yesterday, and I think he's desperate not to look that way again in the postseason.
This is where the crossroads on his career might have come a lot sooner than a lot of people. You know, a lot of people have the crossroads for Baker Mayfield. They had it on him from the get-go, and they're sold more than ever before that he is not the guy. Yeah. With Kyler Murray, there were more indications on a week-by-week basis in the regular seasons that this guy was the guy that not only is the franchise quarterback, but he could have a lot of great things happen. Now, suddenly, for the way they petered out this season at the end and then the way the season ended in the playoffs, there's going to be a whole lot said and a whole lot written and a whole lot publicized about him. How he internalizes that, and if he uses it as motivation and he works his tail off in the offseason and he comes back with a chip on his shoulder, you know you got your guy.
Exactly.
But if he looks at it and starts woe is me-ing like his body language states a lot of times, and he looks at it like it was them, not me, and then you have another one next season, look out now.
Yeah, this is to me why that loss yesterday for Kyler Murray is going to be so telling on who he is as a professional going forward. To Brendan's point about being like realistic where you are, like it makes a lot more sense for a young team with a young quarterback, get those playoff licks out of the way, the playoff reps. That way you can kind of experience it a little bit. Then you hope it's the natural evolution of where you are as a team. Even for the old teams, though, like you just have to be realistic where you are. Like the fact that you're 9-8 in the playoffs to me is a positive over 8-9 and just missing the playoffs, but you can't let it have that false hope. You have to be realistic. I would turn it back to the Rich Bisaccia thing for the Raiders. Like, yes, you snuck into the playoffs, but be realistic who you are. Like, are you going to be a perennial playoff team with Bisaccia as your head coach going forward? You got to be realistic where you are, even if you make it in the postseason, and you can't make bad decisions based on you sneaking into the playoffs. 713-780-ESPN. Curious your opinion. Is it worth being a fraud playoff team? 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, Nick Caserio has been very vocal about trading down from number 3. Must be a listener to the Killer Bees. Why is he being so vocal about it? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, let me tell you about new brakes again, because I've been telling you about them for quite a while. I only speak for companies I believe in. I have personal experiences with new brakes. I have no reason not to believe that they are going to be great for you like they were great for me, like so many of the listeners that hit me up and said, I needed the contact information for new brakes, and then came back to me and said, oh my God, painless, easy, phenomenal. I will do it again and recommend it to my friends. That's why new brakes is the only way you should get your brakes done anymore, because you don't have to go to these seedy waiting rooms at these brake shops where you're at the mercy of a mechanic, where if he's got a slow day going, he might take his own sweet time and you might be tied up waiting in a waiting room for hours when you should be at meetings, checking emails, getting in touch with people, or maybe you want to watch a game or cut the lawn or drink a beer and have some fun with friends and you can't because you know you got to get your brakes fixed. They come to you to do what they do. It's the same way you don't waste an hour in the grocery store. You have the groceries curbside or delivered to you because it saves time, and saving time is saving money. All you got to do is go to nubrakes.com, nubrakes.com. Mention ESPN 97.5, save 10%, and then figure out everything I'm telling you and more. The fact that they have only skilled technicians that are certified, and all they do is brakes. They're not going to upsell you on anything else. They use the same parts as the other brake shops. Prices are competitive with every other brake shop in town. And they come to you to do what they do. My job took less than 45 minutes. They did it here while we were at the studios doing a show, and they did a fantastic job. They'll do the same for you. Check them out today. It's newbreaks.com.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh boy, got a message deleted by a moderator.
He said it was a bot and spam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I checked them safe.
The bot and spam. All right, that's fair enough. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Batman saying Kyle looked like he was too small for that game. Is that a valid thing? Is that a valid thing about Kyler Murray? Like you hear GMs all the time talk about how they want a quarterback who's, you know, a certain height. Feel like you have to adjust what you do offensively, maybe roll out of the pocket a little bit more. I always point to Russell Wilson, though. Like, if Russell Wilson can get to a Super Bowl, why can't Kyler Murray?
Well, that's what I said he's compared to, but right now,
Drew Brees,
his track record shows you that he's kind of on the same path as Russell Wilson in the fact that he is a great front runner. He's a great first 10 weeks of the season type guy. But granted, Russell Wilson still won a Super Bowl, right? He was in another one he should have won. He did a lot of good things. But until he gets those things under his belt too, the one thing, unlike Russell Wilson, that you're going to criticize him for is not only the late season fade, but the fact that in the playoffs, the thing that Brendan and I were talking about during the break is, what really disturbed me the most is, he's an unbelievable runner of the football. Mm-hmm. And he's never, ever looked at an opportunity to run and looked fearful. Last night, he looked scared. Last night, he looked like, because of the quote-unquote daunted veteran pass rush of the Rams, after he saw right away Von Miller was going to be a presence, Aaron Donald was not taking, you know, no for an answer when he was rushing the quarterback. There were a couple times that he normally would have bailed, gotten out of the pocket, and got positive yards. Instead, he fell right on his fanny, turned his cheek, and was like, please don't hurt me. And then when he missed the deep ball, which has been a staple of it, scrambling long enough to find an off-play open receiver, and he missed the deep ball, and then on another one, he's rolling out. He can either run and probably get 7 to 10, or he's got a receiver crossing that he can actually throw it to, and he throws it like in another stratosphere. I'm like, oh, he's scared tonight, and that's not a good look.
Yeah, the fact whenever they had Donald and Von Miller on the same side of the ball, I thought that was awesome defense, by the way. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Nick Caserio, whether it's the press conference, whether it's the highway to hell, whether it's just blurting things out with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. He has this idea, and here's a little bit of what Nick Casario said last week at the press conference that has caught everybody's attention.
You know, right now we have the third overall pick or whatever that is. You know, whether or not we stay at three, that's a whole separate discussion, but we'll talk about the draft a little bit later. So,
all right, so he tells the presser, if we're still at number three, which is totally unprompted, he tells Harris and Vandermeer on HoustonTexans.com with the interview he had with those guys late last week, if we're still at three, toward that this morning, the highway to hell, he said if we're still at three. Like, and we asked Randy Mueller, who we had on earlier today, former NFL general manager with the Saints and the Dolphins, well, why is he being so vocal about it? Randy Mueller gave us the answer where, well, he wants the news to get out there. I'm not buying that. Like, if you're going to trade, like, if you're going to put number three on the market, aren't you texting every general manager in the NFL saying, hey, you know, number three could be had. Hey, number three could be had. You're texting this to every dude. Like, if you're making it available, you're saying to every GM, number three can be had for the right deal. You don't need to go behind your microphone to spread the message. Why is Casario being so public about the idea of trading down from number three, which is an idea we support?
Because you use every resource that's given to you. You might not feel like it's the most accurate way to get the message to those people that are decision makers. Some might say, you know what, and I've worked with a lot of different people, coaches and players and otherwise, that utilized the media like a tool to get their end result. You know what, I feel like I can say this, Jeff Van Gundy was a guy that didn't like the one-on-one confrontational meeting with a player. But he liked to manipulate the player through the media by saying very clearly to certain media members and made sure it was very prevalent in the next day's story or next day's, you know, wherever they're putting out a television report, so that said player or someone within their camp would get the message to said player so he could avoid those kind of confrontations. I think that that's the same way if you look at it. If you're Nick Casario, you're just being a smart businessman in the NFL. You're saying, you know what, sure, I could send the emails, but also sometimes those backfire because sometimes – especially if I was saying this about a player being on like a Tunsil being available as opposed to because okay. Then if you don't trade him, if the agent or the player finds out and some team at that had tried
we'll
to get
call him,
him. What's that?
We'll call him. Call him and tell him that way. There's not evidence.
But I think that from this standpoint, you make sure that it the message is sent at least maybe not crystal clear, but the message continues to be sent that, look, it's not just one stray message that got away from me when talking to these people as opposed to the media. This is a message you're going to continue to hear from me. We're open for business. And for all of our picks, we are not going to be stupid enough to say that where we're picking is where we're picking, and those players are going to make such a big difference for us, we've got to keep them.
There's no doubt that Nick Casario gives the messages through the media, whether it's behind the microphone, whether he leaks it out to McClain and Berman. That way they can go out and report that the Texans are this close to trading Deshaun Watson to Miami before the November 2nd trade deadline. There's no doubt that they play the media, whether it's even the philosophical differences quote that came out to the media even before it was leaked out or even before the email by the Houston Texans PR staff said that same thing as well. And look, I totally understand Nick Casario wants to keep his options available at number three. In fact, we've been very vocal and have been advocates that the Texans need to trade down. They have so many holes on the 53. One of the best ways to fill up all of those holes is you start to trade down, acquire a bunch of draft picks, and hope that you hit on more draft picks than you currently have at your disposal. So I like the idea. To me, there's more behind this message because, like, yes, Nick Casario wants to give that message through the media, but to me, the message through the media isn't to the other general managers. Like, if he really wants to trade number three, he's calling all these dudes. He's texting all these dudes. He's getting the message to them behind closed doors. He's getting it to them, you know, through that normal conversation you would have. To me, the message is to the fans. Like, whether it's to lessen the fan expectations of what they're going to do at number three, whether it's to lessen the idea of some, like, you know, bunch of fans saying, I want Evan Neal at number three, whatever the case may be, this to me is Casario being very vocal. Yes, it's a message to the media, but it's not to the other GMs. He could just call those guys. To me, this is a message to the fan base to perhaps lower the expectations of what they could do at number three.
I could see that, Jeremy, but I can also say that there's going to be a time for him to send the message to all the general managers. He's just starting the process. And in starting the process, you're right. He's also probably setting expectations or altering them for the fan base, for the media, for everybody else, so that he doesn't get killed or be critiqued critically because of the fact that he did this. But I think that it's also from the standpoint of, look, I'm going to send the message now, and it's a bad look if every general manager under the sun knows you're trying to shop that pick before you even know who might be available and who teams might want to trade up for. And then you can actually deal with said team instead of all the teams going, well, we know Nick's trying to unload three and look like, you know, he's trying to get the best offer, as opposed to waiting for the appropriate time and then having maybe one team you're having a discussion with going, hey, I'd really like to move up Nick to number three. Okay, cool. Well, this is what we're thinking. And then he can go back and say, all right, well, you know what? At least I didn't have to have everybody under the sun thinking they could either get this easily or that we're actually trying to get rid of it. We don't really want it. And then maybe later I can come in and say, you know what? We're really focused on a few guys here. We feel like the way the draft looks like it's going to fall could be in our best interest to stay right where we're at, stand pat, and get one of those guys, and then go have all the guys go, wait a minute, I didn't get an email that said he was definitely trying to unload this. So my thought process is I have to kind of believe him. And maybe I'm willing to offer more.
Look, I mean, to me, there is value in spreading the word. I just feel like if you're spreading the word to the general managers, doing it through the media isn't exactly the way of normal protocol. Like, it's January 18th. We're in the middle of January. You haven't had the combine. Everybody's not done with their player evaluations. You don't even have the complete draft order set yet, because how teams, you know, advance and go far in the playoffs determines the order as well. Like, what is more likely, that in the middle of January, Nick Caserio is spreading the message to the other general managers around the league that number three is available, when he can text them, call them, email them, do whatever? Or is it the fact that he's telling the fan base, hey, look, don't fall in love with anybody at number three? Like, he's creating that soft landing where, yeah, if I trade down, you can't roast me because I told you this in January 15th.
And I think, you know, to some extent, we're nitpicking at this point.
Yeah.
Because I think that, look, I think you're right. I think that, again, you're talking about an organization that cares way too much about public perception, fan bases' opinions, media and how they're going to be critical of any move that they make. And whether Nick came in with the same kind of mindset or he inherited it when he walked into the building for the first time and realized this is how our organization thinks and worries about things, all that stuff's on the table. And it's all fair fodder to talk about. But I think that at a certain point, what you want everybody to know and then what you're actually going to do is still two different things, because I still don't think they know what they're going to do.
You can't.
It's way too early, right?
You don't know the offer.
Yeah, and you don't know if you're going to fall in love with a guy later. But realistically, as we've been harping on everybody, don't set yourself in a position of you are set in stone, we got to get said guy. Set yourself for how quickly can we make the appropriate savvy moves to get this rebuild moving faster.
Is it nitpicky? Yeah, it is absolutely nitpicky. I would agree with that. But I also, like, I feel like you got to be truthful about it. Like, we have texters and callers that call Nick Caserio a liar, right? Like, this to me is a little bit of the propaganda. This is a little bit of the mistruth as well. Like, to me, you're creating the soft landing spot. Is it nitpicky? Yeah, but I feel like we owe it to our listeners to give, like, yeah, but look at this. This is the more realistic scenario of what's really going on. Don't just buy the message that, oh, yeah, we're open for business. No, there's a reason that he's saying it. Everything Nick Caserio does is very calculated.
Sure.
And is it being calculated because he wants to spread the message to GMs when he can do it by back channels? I don't think so. He's trying to say something to the fan base to get him off his back a little bit.
Here's the other thing. He owes these people nothing. He owes the fan base nothing. He owes the media nothing. If he truly wants to be the guy that is going to do it Sinatra his way, and he continues to, from the headsets to picking the assistants to these things too, it should carry over the same way Belichick does a press conference or gives a rat's ass if some lady's doing a column on resolutions. He doesn't have to give you anything. I think the false expectation is, especially from the fan base, you owe us something. You owe us honesty. And then we hear Tom Brady and others say, the last thing I was ever going to do was tell you exactly how I was truly thinking about anything.
Yeah.
And the guy that I was complimenting all week as being a great defensive player was the guy we were going to attack first. So I think there's a false set of pretenses for a lot of people, media involved, that are included, that think that the minute that he has a microphone and the red light's on, that he owes us honesty. And that's not the way it works.
And it's not realistic. You got to dig through it. It's not what it is on the surface. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. One of the Wohlhausmen will join us next. Does it concern them how much power Caserio has And is a D a passing grade? We discuss it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, if you're looking for something new and different to entertain you, whether it be on a date night or hanging out with your friends or maybe someplace you could take the whole family to, I've got an idea for you. And again, it's potato, potato. If you're looking to mini golf, if you're looking for putt-putt golf, this is what we're calling it. We're calling it Pixar Putt. And you know what Pixar is? You might not be familiar with the name, but you're familiar with the movies that it actually entertains. Toy Story, The Incredibles, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo. Ask your kids. They know all of them and all the characters involved. Now they're all involved in every single hole of 18 holes of putt-putt golf right there at Discovery Green. It is absolutely fantastic, and you can get involved. But the only way you can get tickets is by going to PixarPutt.com. That's right, PixarPutt.com. It's the ultimate pop-up mini golf putt-putt experience now until March 20th at Discovery Green. 18 full interactive holes inspired by those movies, those stories, and those characters. Great to go with the entire family or friends or a date night. After dark, 18 and older crowd, you can actually have a great time too. Socially distanced, sanitized all the equipment. The round takes around an hour and a half or so. So actually it's going to kill some time, but you can have and a ton of fun in the entire time that you're playing. Tickets available only online. Pixar Putt. That's P-I-X-A-R Putt with two T's. .com for tickets and information. My family loves it. Yours will too. Check it out until March 20th. It's PixarPutt.com.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Cody Stutz in here, one of the Wilhousemen, joining us, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Cody, does it concern you how much power Nick Caserio has?
No, why? Why would it concern me?
Because he's got a lot of power.
So?
I'm just asking your opinion.
Who would you rather have the power?
Well, I think it should be a correlation between head coach, GM working together, kind of like a John Robinson, Mike Vrabel situation.
So you wanted David Culley to have more power?
No, there was a wrong hire for that.
Okay.
No. But, so, like,
but the next guy should have power?
Yeah, what do you think?
What kind of power do you want him to have?
I think it should be a partnership. Like if it's Brian Flores, and I don't think it's going to be, but just use like Brian Flores as an example with this. Like I feel like they could work together. John Robinson and Mike Vrabel to me is like the home run scenario for whoever Nick Caserio hires, where they have this partnership. You know, Vrabel is trusted by Robinson and Robinson's trusted by Vrabel. They're working together on this, you know, project to make the Titans as good as possible, as opposed to a Caserio who hired a puppet in David Culley and told him everything to do.
So he has to hire the next Mike Vrabel?
Sure.
Okay.
You would say that about D'Amico Ryans, right?
It's
that
he's doable. Kind of a Vrabel? Certainly doable. Yeah. I just don't understand what you, like, the general manager has power in most NFL organizations.
I would say that Caserio's power is unprecedented power. Most general managers would tell you that Nick Caserio being on the headset, something they've never heard of before in the entire history NFL.
But why does the headset thing matter?
I think it matters from perception and optics. Like if Doug Peterson's the best candidate out on the market.
What would you prefer Caserio do during the game? Would you rather him sit next to
Kyle? No. There's a big difference between being on the headset, and we had Randy Mueller on again who said he had the access to the headset, but being communicative and also being involved, as it's been specifically laid out, in key decisions in-game.
Sure. So Caserio would tell you, and I don't know that I totally believe this, that he makes suggestions, and suggestions from your boss are taken differently than suggestions from someone who is a colleague. In New England, when he was on the headset, he was a colleague of Josh McDaniels, and Bill Belichick was his boss. Those were the two people that handled the offense and the defense when he was there. Now he is this guy's boss, so if he makes a suggestion and you don't agree with that as the head coach, then you maybe are risking some sort of issue if you don't follow the boss's order.
Right.
But he would tell you that it's not an order, it's a suggestion. But everybody knows when you get a suggestion from your boss, it carries more weight than a suggestion from a colleague. Like if I told you to do something, that doesn't matter as much as if Mr. Gow told you to do something.
100% correct, and that's kind of the point where I was going with that. And look, I'm not even going to argue or dismiss the idea that it doesn't optimize the Texans' chances of winning on game day that Nick Caserio's on the headsets. It might be a good thing. You could argue with me that it is a good thing, that it gives the Texans a better chance to win. Where the negative to me comes into play is when you're hiring a head coach or you're looking at free agents or you're trying to build a staff. Let's just assume that Doug Peterson's the best coordinator on the job market right now, whether that's your opinion or not. Let's just make that assumption.
Sure.
And he has no ties with the circle of the Patriots, or he has no ties with Casario being on the headset, or Jack Easterby, if you want to draw that conclusion as well.
Okay.
And Nick Casario, if you heard him talk today down the dial, he said that he's even been asked by people that he has interviewed about Casario being on the headset.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the biggest negative of it is not game day. Like, you can, again, make the case that it's a good thing. It's the optics by people outside of the Patriot circle that look at that and say, I'm out. I'd rather go anywhere else than the GM talking in my ears during the game.
My response to that, if I was Nick Casario, my response to anybody critical of that was, if it's good enough for Bill Belichick, it's good enough for whoever the hell the head coach at the Houston Texans is going to be.
Sure.
Don't you think?
Yeah, yes, but would that be received? Would that message be received by somebody who's outside of the circle like a Doug Peterson?
Well, if it's not received, then tell the guy to hit the door and go interview the next guy.
Yeah.
Like, the guy's got power. He's not giving it up. Plus,
no.
Do you want Romeo making
these
decisions?
That's the only system he knows,
like,
too.
Do you want Romeo having the input? Do you want some guy who's been in the analytics department for 4 years in two different organizations making these decisions? Like, I want this guy who's done this for 19 years helping out on these decisions.
Again, that's back to the headset point during the game. Like, again, you can make the case that Casario being on the headset for the 60 minutes of game
sure.
action is good.
And any head coach doesn't want that. I don't want that guy to be the head coach.
And I think that goes back to the point of where I believe that Nick Casario, by doing this, not that it's a bad thing, dismisses the pool of candidates you could potentially hire for this job.
Can I pick my bone with you?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Was that it or was there something else?
No.
Well, let me step out.
Why does it matter if he says they're open for business at 3?
Why does it matter? It doesn't matter that he says that. I just feel like the message is mixed. Like, I don't feel like he's going out and telling the other 31 general managers that 3 is like available for business through the media. Like, I feel like he would go to the head coach. I feel like he would go to the – or I'm sorry. He would go to the GM. He would send a text. He would send an email. He'd pick up the phone and call him. I feel like the message that he's sending to the media, not that it's a bad thing, is to the fans, basically creating a soft landing spot for him if he does trade number 3.
You know who has, according to various websites, the most drafting power via their assets right now?
Who's that?
The New York Jets. The Jets pick 4. The Texans pick 3. There's 2 other teams in front of the Texans. Moore is not going to be bad in this situation. Like, the moving down would be about adding assets.
Right. We've been very vocal to add assets.
That's a big
positive
for me.
We've been saying that for 3 months.
I also think, too, you don't want someone to call the Jets at 4 before they call you at 3.
Those are all great points.
Yeah.
But don't you normally, by a general manager, call the teams and have these discussions as opposed to saying it through the media and through press conferences? Like, absolutely 100%.
Well, so if he wants to reach the GMs, he certainly can, but who's he reaching if he gets out there and you got Pro Football Talk and ESPN and all these different places?
Media.
He's reaching owners, man.
Okay.
He's reaching owners.
That.
He's reaching guys that step in and make a decision for the general manager. Hey, go up to 3 and go get us a quarterback. That's what he's really hoping.
Isn't it also a line between desperation and communication? The fact that you look desperate if you send every other GM in the league, we're open for business and looking to trade down, as opposed to, like you said, communicating with everybody, hey, the door is open to discuss our picks.
It's a flare, man. It's a flare. Whoever wants to see it can see the flare and start calling.
What about the later grade D? Whenever you were in school,
what's a passing grade? What's
a failing grade?
D is for degree.
That's right.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I had
Texas
so much
Tech.
Hope
you're asking
today.
The wrong person
That's
about
great
education
point.
Standards.
I've never agreed with you more.
That's a fact, by the way.
What do you have coming
That's
up on the wheelhouse
ridiculous.
Today? What's coming up on the
well,
wheelhouse?
Well, you have to make a C or something.
Yes.
Well, you had to make a C in classes that were in your.
Your GPA had to be a C or better.
In your discipline, it was C's.
But to play sports, you had to have C or better. Suddenly, in the state of Texas, when you define letter grades in
athletes
by tens, and suddenly when you get to that teetering range, oh, now it's just 5.
Hot take: athletes should only be in pass-fail classes, and they should all be passing.
I think they are in college. Cody Stoops didn't tell me what's coming up on the Wheelhouse, but I promise you it'll be good.
It's the
wheelhouse. 3-7. Thanks so much, Brendan, doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brad, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.